Alrighty, we are back with another episode. Sitting in today, pinch hitting is my brother-in-law Matt. How you doing today, Matt?
I'm doing great, Nate. How you doing
I'm
today?
good, man. It's October 29th, the evening of October 29th. Redskins won yesterday, 20-13. We're gonna talk. It's gonna be a heavy Redskins day for us. Heavy Redskins. It's maybe time to be optimistic.
I think so. Couldn't
Yeah.
agree more at this point.
We'll touch on the NFC East. Dallas was on a bye this week. Philly kind of held on for dear life at the end against Jacksonville, and the Giants are probably dead in the water at 1-7. At the end, we'll do a mixed bag. We're going to talk about the World Series, talk about the Red Sox. We're not really going to talk about the Caps or the Wizards tonight. Not a whole lot to talk about there. And really, the World Series just ended last night. And one of the questions I'm going to ask you at the end, I mean, is Boston one of the best teams of all time? I mean, they just steamrolled this season.
They sure did. And I do have an answer for that, which we'll get to later. But yeah, what a night.
What a
What a
night, man.
weekend.
Yeah, it was a really interesting weekend. I mean, the 18-inning game Friday night that went almost to 4 a.m. Eastern
Yes.
ruined my Saturday. I had no sleep. And I did stay up. It's funny, I fell asleep in the bottom of the 18th inning. So I missed the home run, the game, the walk-off, but I did see it the following morning. So I was happy. I only missed half an inning. And then officially this morning, Bryce Harper and Manny Machado are now free agents. They are free to negotiate with anybody. So we'll talk about that as well at the end. Before we begin, as always, we are affiliated with the DMV SportsNetwork.com. It's DMV SportsNetwork.com. They can be followed on Twitter at DMV underscore SN. They just announced on Saturday, and we are part of that lineup. They now have seven podcasts that they are releasing, one a day. We are included in that. And I've been repping this for a couple weeks, Fantasy Fever by Marcus Hemingway. I've been listening to it. It did not help this week. I lost both my games, but Marcus does a great job. He breaks down waiver wire pickups, breaks down who he thinks you should sit, who you should start. But give DMV Sports Network a look. They are really doing some things. They're doing a lot of articles every day on DC Sports. So check them out. We're happy to be affiliated with them. They blast our stuff on social media, and we like to return the favor during podcasts. All right, Matt. I've been thinking about this, and I'm just going to say it, and then I want you to react to it. I'm in. I thought it would take a little bit more, but I'm in, man. I'm emotionally invested. I'm in. This team, this week's setup for them to just do what the Redskins usually do. Set up for them to look past the Giants, look to the Falcons, look to, hey, we could be 6-2, we could be 7-2, and to come out flat. And defensively, they came out with a hammer and they did not stop. And it got me excited. I'm in. I'm bought in. I'm ready for the pain at the end of the year. This team's got me, man. I'm in. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. At the end of the game, I decided that I was in. And it probably didn't take that long, but I can tell you, and I tweeted you or texted you rather during the first quarter of the game and said how boring it was. I mean, it was miserably boring for a while. And then all of a sudden, that defense just started putting the pressure on Eli and, the poor guy.
Seven sacks, right?
Seven sacks. I think he was hit eight times in addition to that. I mean, he had a rough day, but it was enjoyable to watch.
It was.
Offensively, we're still missing it.
That's a polite way to put it, yeah.
listen, I don't think it's all doom and gloom with the Redskins offense. Which is probably a different take than what you hear on the radio, for some of the people that we don't care to listen to. When we run the ball well, we win. And that's been the key to our success so far to this point. But the passing game, it's not been so good, Nate.
No, it hasn't been good. There's a lot. There's plenty that you can criticize. The offense is boring to watch. The play calling looks just vanilla and unimaginative. But this defense is one of the best defenses that Washington's had probably since the Greg Williams era. And I wanted to see them generate pressure with three or four. They did that yesterday. They're going to have a good opportunity to do that next week against the Falcons. But these, and they're young guys, man, right. This core. And we talked about this before we started. When Scott McLuhan was here, his philosophy was you build from the inside out. And look at the two lines, right? The offensive line, in my opinion, is one of the best in football when they're all healthy. I saw a thing on Twitter today, Brian Baldinger breaking down, just saying the Hogs would be proud, man. I mean, they were just a hat on a hat and just eliminating people.
Yes.
And then you look at the defensive line, and these are mostly homegrown guys. I mean, the entire defensive line are homegrown. Ioannidis, Allen, and Payne. You throw in Preston Smith, Ryan Kerrigan, Mason Foster isn't a, and Zach Brown are not homegrown guys, but they were nice signings. Offensive line, you're talking about Trent, you're talking about Sean LaVau, Brandon Sheriff, Morgan Moses. The Redskins have done a phenomenal job building there from the inside out. And obviously the last thing to hit is going to be the receiving core. Doxson took maybe, I think, another step forward yesterday, 5 catches, 49 yards. But, this team, they're scary. I saw somebody tweet today that nobody wants to see the Redskins' defense, especially come December and January.
No, I mean, and at this point, it's really hard to pick an MVP of the Redskins' defense. You know, a lot of people are going to say DJ Swearinger, and I'd be all in for that. There are a lot of people that are going to say Matt Ioannidis. There are a lot of people that would say Jonathan Allen. You know, and at this point, you've got guys like Ryan Kerrigan that have really stepped it up. Since the New Orleans game, I think Josh Norman's really turned it on. You know, it seems like everybody's kind of buying in. And really, I think Greg Stroman, you know, he kind of had a rough first quarter. But after that, you know, he was pretty good. It's like he grew up in the game.
What was the Giants' offense yesterday? I mean, it was two really deep defensive pass interference penalties. Good calls.
Right, sure.
But that was pretty much it. I mean, they were, again, at the end of the game, the Redskins give up a touchdown drive that makes a two-score kind of walk-away win, makes it a little bit, but I mean, that was with, what, 20 seconds left or anything, something like
right.
that. Yeah, I think there's a lot to be excited about. I'm going to say something, and if Josh were here, he'd kill me for saying this. It's a championship-caliber defense. You can win a championship with this defense.
You could. I said earlier that, you know, if this team were playing 18 years ago compared to the Ravens, and I'm not saying that they're the Ravens' defense of that year quite yet, but, you know, that's the kind of defense that we have. I mean, they're quick, they tackle well, and they get to the quarterback. I mean, that's a recipe for success. They get off the field. I mean, I think the Giants only had 1-3 and out yesterday. I could be wrong on that. I didn't fact check that, but I think that's what I recall. But they didn't get multiple first downs on drives. So it left us with fairly decent field position, you know, and the defensive line has really, I mean, they've really been impressive. For being as young as they are, they're exciting to watch. So they can wreak havoc.
They can wreak havoc. They have done a phenomenal job stopping the run. They're the second, let me check that, make sure, yes, the second best rushing defense in all of football, giving up only 80 yards a game. Yeah, they're amazing to watch. And the thing about the game yesterday is it had at the beginning, the first half had a very similar feel to the Dallas game. The Redskins dominated the first half. The Giants couldn't do anything with the football.
Right.
Redskins did score an early touchdown, but then it's like the offense just puttered out. And this is not an offense right now that's going to win you a football game. They're going to score somewhere in the neighborhood of 17 to 21 points a game, if they're lucky, and the defense is going to put them in position over and over again to win a football game. I do worry moving ahead. I mean, this week's going to be a big test. The Falcons can score points. They have a trio of receivers in Mohamed Sanu, Calvin Ridley, and Julio Jones that are just, I mean, they're going to be tough to cover. especially if Dunbar doesn't play.
Right.
And they're not high on him playing this week. He's still dealing with, it was a shin thing, but also a hamstring. It kind of matriculated down to his shin. And they just said he wasn't even close to playing this weekend, and they're hopeful for Sunday. But this, it'll be a test, because if the Redskins have to score 30 to win, they're not going to. Not usually. So, sure, there's stuff to knock, but they're fun to watch. Their defense is fun to watch. Their offense is horrible to watch.
It is. You know, it's great to see Adrian Peterson running the ball.
Yeah.
You know, he's, he's been the key to our victories. When Adrian Peterson runs well, the Redskins win. When he doesn't, we lose. And that's been the case. You know, the New Orleans game, that was sort of a measuring stick early on, I think, for where our team was. And I think it's sort of an anomaly at this point because, I mean, nothing went well for the Redskins that night. Offensively, defensively, it was the worst game that I think I've ever watched the Redskins play since I've ever been watching the Redskins. But since that night, they've been getting better. So I think that the offense is still a work in progress. I think you could call it that. The defense is exponentially better than the offense at this point.
Yeah, and I think the numbers bear it out. I mean, excuse me. I said earlier, the Redskins are fifth in defense in points per game. They're giving up 19.1 points per game. They're second against the run, 13th against the pass. They're a top 10 defense, top five defense probably.
They are.
Their offense is a little different. They're eighth in rushing at 128 yards a game, but they're 26th in passing at only 212 yards per game. The offense is a work in progress. They tried to feed Reed the ball early yesterday. They got him involved early. But Adrian Peterson has been he's been the fuel that's kept the train moving. And as you stated, that New Orleans game, I mean, he separated his shoulder early in the game. He only had 4 carries for 6 yards. Since then, he had 17 carries for 97 yards against Carolina. He averaged 5.7 yards per carry. Against Dallas, 24 for 99 yards, averaged 4.13 per carry. And then yesterday, I mean, obviously he had the big 65-yard touchdown run, but 26 carries, 149 yards. I mean, the guy, and you said it perfectly, in their two losses against Indianapolis, he had 11 carries for 20 yards. Against the Saints, 4 carries for 6. You take those out of it, his lowest total is 96 yards, which was in the opener against Arizona. So he's gone in their wins, 96 yards, 120, 97, 99, 149. The guy is a frontline running back.
Absolutely.
Chris Carter had to tweet yesterday, I was wrong about Adrian Peterson. He's got plenty left in the tank. And it's a question on the outline. I'm going to ask you just point blank.
Yeah.
Where would this team be without Adrian Peterson if Samaje Perine was their feature back or Rob Kelly?
I don't know where they would be, but I know that they would not be in first place. That's the only way to break it down, because Capri Bibbs wasn't even on the team. I mean, he was on the practice squad. Samaje Perine, he's got a fumbling problem. They aren't comfortable with him. I mean, geez, he wasn't even active for the game. And Chris Thompson's still coming off the leg injury. So, you know, he was not and he has never been the kind of guy that's going to carry the ball 25 times a game. So Adrian Peterson has been the savior. And kudos to Doug Williams for
caught a lot of shit for that.
He did. But you know what? Who cares?
I don't give a damn.
You know, he didn't call Bruce Allen and brought the guy in. There are a lot of teams right now that I believe wish they had Adrian Peterson as their running back.
Imagine if Bruce Allen had said, don't bring him in, where the team would be. I mean, let's not talk about Bruce Allen. He's a waste of oxygen. my feeling is they had two middle-of-the-road running backs in Rob Kelly and Samaje Perine. Obviously, Geis was supposed to be the superstar. But look at AP. Offensive line's doing their job, but his vision is so good. His ability to cut, his ability to kind of improvise on the run, he's still got it. He may be a step slower. I don't know, man. That touchdown, long touchdown run yesterday was beautiful. He's hard to bring down. One person, the touchdown pass from Alex Smith in the first quarter. I mean, that he should have been stopped at the 5-yard line.
Right.
He sheds the tackler and walks in for a touchdown. He had multiple runs yesterday where he carried defenders 2, 3, 4 yards. He's still got it.
Absolutely.
Even if he's not at his peak, he's still got it. The biggest question for me, and they talked about this a little bit on the broadcast yesterday, and I mentioned it a few episodes ago when it was, they had such an early bye. They're playing 13 consecutive weeks. And for the most part, the team is young, but for a guy like AP, Jay Gruden is going to have to pick his spots where he takes the foot off the pedal a little bit. You got to keep this guy fresh for... Now, I'm not saying he's not good. He's in a phenomenal physical shape.
Right.
But you got to keep him fresh.
Well, everybody was worried since they signed him whether or not he could last a full season. And there were a lot of people who said, you know what, if we can get 9-10 games out of him, you know, then... That's going to be pretty good, because by that point Chris Thompson should be healthy enough where maybe he can start taking on some more carries. Now it's like, I don't want to see Chris Thompson taking on carries. Give the ball to Adrian Peterson. Let the guy do what he does best, and that's run hard downfield. You know, that 64-yard run that he had yesterday, the way he was able to take that angle away from that defender, I mean, he's still got the speed. There is no way Rob Kelly would have been able to pull that off, and neither would have Samaje Perine. I don't know if you saw Adrian Peterson's presser after the game, but he said, you know, he was watching the Jumbotron, and he saw the guys behind him, so he started getting those knees up a little higher just in case. I mean, those are things that, you know, rookies don't think about, or, you know, second-year guys don't think about doing. That's the experience that Adrian Peterson brings to this team. And I really hope that some of these young guys are taking some notes from him.
It's almost like, and I don't want to talk about next season because, I mean, we still have 9 games left in this season, but I would be fully on board with them bringing AP back and him splitting carries with Darius Geis.
Absolutely.
And saying to Geis, hey, man, absorb as much as you can from this guy. You're right. That touchdown, 64-yard touchdown run, it's a 10-yard gain at best with Perine or Kelly. I want to just give some credit. Brandon Scherff completely erased
right
his defender.
And Chase Roullier.
Yeah, I mean, the whole... You probably could have picked up 6 or 7
yards. I was going to give you credit for maybe doing 10 yards.
10 yards, maybe. I don't know. I'm pretty slow. But the impressive part of that run was when he got to the second level, his acceleration, the angle that he took to prevent people from being able to catch him. This team, he's... To me right now, he's their offensive MVP. I don't think there's a question... And the team would not be 5-2 without him. I don't even know if they'd be 500 or close to 500 without him, because the rest of the offense has been so abysmal. So really, yeah, credit to Doug Williams. Credit to AP, man, staying in shape, coming in ready to play. And credit to Jay Gruden. Saw him in one preseason game and went, he's our starter, he's our guy.
Right.
Yeah, we don't have anybody better than him.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's it. I don't think it was hard to recognize the fact that he was – just so much better than any of the guys that we have. And, you know, no disrespect to them, but Adrian Peterson is one of the best for a reason. I mean, he's just in phenomenal shape. He's so much fun to watch. It's so cool having a running game.
Yeah, I mean, it is really reminiscent of the glory days, and I don't want to put that on them, but a agile, athletic offensive line that can take people out, a power running back who can pick up yards, tough yards, but they can also accelerate and take it to the next level. I mean, the most famous play in Redskin history is John Riggins breaks a tackle and then he's gone. So it is reminiscent. And of course, the quarterback play, I wanted to talk about that quickly. And Alex Smith has been criticized a lot, and I don't want to pile on. One thing he does not do, he doesn't turn the ball over. It has followed him for years. He's a game manager. And last year, he had his best statistical offensive season ever. But then you start to look at, was it because he had Tyreek Hill and Andy Reid calling plays? Maybe. I mean, Pat Mahomes is having an unreal season with Kansas City. But one stat that really kind of stuck out to me, because I've a couple passes he threw yesterday, he just was way off. His accuracy has not been what I thought it would be. He is usually a he's one of the most accurate passers in the NFL, usually.
Right.
First two games this year, Arizona, he averaged 70% completion percentage. Indy, 71.74. The last five games, he's been around 60% or below. So it's a full 10% drop-off in completion percentage. And that has also coincided with three consecutive games, Carolina, Dallas, and the Giants. He hasn't even reached 200 yards passing. So I asked Josh this last week. It's one of three things, or it's a combination of all three. Either his guys aren't getting open, he doesn't know the offense yet, or he's just making really bad decisions. It's probably a combination of all three. What do you think?
A few weeks ago, if you would have asked me this question, I would have said that the receivers are just not getting open. But after watching it yesterday and going back over some of the plays from yesterday, well, every play from yesterday offensively, he has been unusually inaccurate. He missed a lot of throws yesterday. And we were very fortunate that a couple of those didn't get picked off. I mean, there was a ball to Jordan Reed that, I mean, it was, you know, it was kind of hard to tell whether it was Jordan's fault on not cutting at the right time, but it hit him in the head. It bounced straight up. I mean, that was fortunate it didn't get picked off. There was a deep ball to Paul Richardson.
Right down the seam. I remember that one.
Right down the seam. Paul Richardson was
He missed him by 10 yards.
Yeah, he was nowhere around. No, fortunately, nobody else was. I mean, I'm not quite sure whose fault that was either.
That looked like a rookie throw because it wasn't 10 yards too deep or too short. It was 10 yards to the left.
Right.
I mean, that wasn't even close.
It wasn't.
He actually had a window where that would have been a touchdown pass.
It's true. You know, going into this season, one of the things that people talked about regarding Alex Smith was his ability to throw the deep ball. The other thing, too, was his ability to use his legs to pick up the first downs. And we haven't been seeing that at all. I think he was credited for three rushes, one of which would have been a kneel down at the end of the game. So would he have 13 yards rushing yesterday? One stat that really jumps out to me is he had 14 completions yesterday of under 10 yards. And the longest completion was a 25-yarder to Paul Richardson. You know, that's just not, it's not going to cut it going into playing these other divisional games. And especially if we're fortunate enough to make the playoffs, I really think that we need to work on this. Not we, he. But I was happy to see them target Jordan Reed early. And he got a lot of targets yesterday. Most of his receptions, I believe, were in the first half. I think he only had two in the second half. So that was something that I'd like to see more of, because while Crowder is still out, and even if Crowder is in, Jordan Reed is still our best receiver. So he needs to be getting fed the ball a lot more. And that's what I would like to see, even though he's not Alex Smith is not losing a game for us. He's just not being a contributing factor in the win.
I mean, he's got two picks all year, and they were in back-to-back games against Green Bay and New Orleans. The last three games, he hasn't thrown an interception. To your point about yardage, Reed had seven catches but only 38 yards. I think a fourth factor, I think he's trying to be too perfect, and that it's been a knock on him. He's been called Captain Checkdown before, and he's not going to... At least it doesn't look like he's going to try to throw a receiver open. He would rather avoid throwing an interception. With a defense like they have, I'm fine with that. To a point. But when it comes down to it, you're going to need to score 28, 30, 35 points in a game to win. You need somebody that's going to try to force the ball into some tight windows. Like, I don't know. They haven't had the necessity, really, for a two-minute drill yet. But I don't know how good he'd be in a two-minute drill, because he has time to throw the ball.
Yeah, he does.
He wasn't sacked yesterday. He has time to throw the ball. I mean, he wasn't sacked yesterday, and he was 20 of 32 for 178 yards. Eli was sacked seven times. He was 30 of 47 for 316.
Yeah.
But he threw two picks. And they're bad picks.
They were.
I mean, the one by DJ, I mean, he was like a center fielder waiting for the ball to come down.
He was.
And I'm not trying to say that Alex had a better game or had a worse game than Eli. I don't think he did. I mean, you can't just go by yards. But I guess it parlays into my next question. Is this team a top-end wide receiver away from being a real contender?
They probably are. We're now in the third season of the former first-round pick and Josh Doctson, who is, the last couple games, gotten a little bit better. He is not our number one. He's not going to be anybody's number one as long as he keeps playing like he is. You know, he has some trouble getting some separation. You know, I think his hands are good, but I think he's got trouble getting separation, and they're afraid to get the ball to him. Kirk Cousins was like that last year. I mean, he didn't like throwing to him.
He did have 5 catches on 5 targets yesterday, so he didn't drop anything.
Yeah, so I mean that's a plus. I mean he's,
but he's not Julio Jones. I mean, nobody is. He's not even Calvin Ridley. He's not Mohamed Sanu. I mean, if we're going to talk about the three receivers that play for Atlanta, he's certainly not like an OBJ or an AJ Green.
He's not a game changer.
No, he's not. And it brings me to, there are two receivers that are available, and the trade deadline is tomorrow. There are two guys available. One was made available today, Golden Tate with Detroit. Detroit has basically put it out there, if you give us a mid-round pick, you could probably get him for a third or fourth rounder. Tate on the year, 44 catches, 517 yards, 3 touchdowns. He's averaging close to 12 yards per catch. He's more of a slot guy than he is an outside guy, but I don't care, man. I need guys that can catch the football. The other guy is Demaryius Thomas. He's certainly on the downslope of his career, but he still has 36 catches this year, 402 yards. He's averaging 11 yards per catch, 3 touchdowns. He's a big body. He's somebody you can line up outside. I think they go get one of those guys, bring him into the system. To me, it's a team that could win one or two playoff games. If they don't, I think their peak is still one playoff win. At home, Minnesota didn't look great yesterday. I think that would be a good football game. Green Bay looked okay against the Rams. I mean, the Rams are a juggernaut.
They are. But Green Bay had an opportunity to win that game yesterday.
They certainly did. I mean, the fumble at the end by Montgomery was, I mean, that's what put the game on ice. I mean, because all they needed was a field goal with less than 2 minutes to go. But if you look at the NFC, I mean, if you want to talk about how the Redskins compare, the cream of the crop in the NFC right now, the Rams and the Saints. I mean, every prognosticator is going to say those two are going to meet in the NFC title game.
Right.
So what would it take for the Redskins to get into that conversation? They have the defense. Matter of fact, they statistically have a better defense than both of them. Talent-wise, maybe not. The Rams should have a phenomenal defense with Ndamukong Suh and Aaron Donald up front. But that's another. So what, in your mind, would it take for them to get to that conversation? Because right now they're in the Green Bay, Minnesota conversation.
Well, we don't have the ability to stretch the field. And we really lack a big playability in general. I mean, we've had a couple. And that's, by a couple, I think I mean two. You know, big plays all season long. Passing plays, that is. But one person that you didn't mention that, you know, a few people have talked about is DeSean Jackson. I mean, you know, that's a guy that knows the system already and can still fly. He's had a pretty good season so far.
And he wants out.
Yes.
His agent went to Tampa and said, we want out.
So if I had my pick, I probably would take DeSean Jackson. And I know that's kind of off the wall there because you know what you get with DeSean Jackson. But, I mean, he averages like 17 yards of reception, which we need so desperately. You know, because these 14 completions of under 10 yards, you know, we find ourselves in third down far too often.
And D-Jax liked it here. I think he wanted to come back. And I don't think that they showed any interest in re-signing him. But I think he would welcome. I think he liked playing in Jay's offense. I think they would welcome him back. I think Ajax is a good pick. I mean, if I had my choice between those three, those are the three most realistic. I mean, you could talk about Odell Beckham. There's talk that there might be conversations. The Giants are not trading Odell Beckham to a division rival, and the Redskins are not going to pay what it's going to take, which is multiple first-round picks.
Right.
Because he's under contract for 5 more years. All of that, and he's at the peak of his career. If I had to pick one, it would probably be D-Jax, because he can take the lid off of a defense. If I had to go second, it'd probably be Golden Tate, because I think he's still somewhat in his prime, whereas Demaryius Thomas is on the back end of his prime. But it all depends on what it would take to get. But I think if you really, it's almost like trades used to be rare in football,
right?
But now it's turning into it's not baseball, but it's close, where you're like, all right, I'm a player or two away from being a serious contender. Let's go get somebody.
And Philly's been doing that the last few years.
Yeah.
I think that we do make a trade. I think that at this point, with being 5-2 in the division, needing a receiver, somebody that we can really rely on to catch the ball, I can't imagine that they don't make a move somewhere. Plus, this has got to be driving Jay Gruden nuts. I mean, a guy that likes to throw the ball and having, you know, your quarterback only have 178 yards passing, this is probably not what he envisioned. I'm sure he's okay with the 5-2 record, but I'm sure he wants to throw the ball a little bit more.
Yeah, and it sounds like he's also getting frustrated with Alex Smith, because I think there are guys that are open on plays. I do think that's where lack of familiarity with the offense comes into play. It's, you know, there are guys open, and Jay is a very good offensive coach. And he probably sees these plays on tape, and he's like, God, if he just found these guys open, drives would continue, we'd be scoring more points. So that, in my mind, they'll get slightly better as they go through the season. Alex will get more comfortable in the offense. But I do think it is also just personnel. And if you can add one of these guys, I think you certainly should try. And Josh has said on multiple podcasts, they have a compensatory third-round pick next year because of Kirk Cousins. Might as well just use that. If you can give up a third, why not? For Golden Tate, DeSean Jackson, or Demaryius Thomas, whoever they feel is the best fit. You have one of the worst receiving corps in football. Any addition you make is going to improve it. I think that's got to be a focus in the next 24 hours, in my opinion.
I couldn't agree more. You know, last year, Jay Gruden, and I don't know if you remember him saying this, but first Kirk Cousins said, if I threw the ball the way Jay Gruden wanted me to throw the ball, I'd have 30 interceptions. And Jay Gruden came back and said, yeah, but he'd have 60 touchdowns. And that was probably true. There was probably some truth to both sides of that. I would like to see more passing. That's all. I love running the football. I love the fact that we are doing that, and I love the fact that Adrian Peterson's looking good.
They're running it so well, they should be able to exploit it with play action.
Well, they should. And I don't know if you remember the old adage that you have to throw the ball to score, but you have to run the ball to win.
Right.
You know, we are winning with the run, but it's evident we're not scoring a lot of points.
That's true. I mean, there's no other way to put it. I mean, when it comes to the Redskins scoring, they're pretty much towards the bottom of the league. That's going to kind of take me into, let's look ahead. Atlanta Falcons this week. Some ranks for the Falcons. I found this interesting. They are third in the league in passing at 300 and almost 18 yards per game. That's the way it should be when your three receivers are Ridley, Jones, and Sanu, and then you add in Hooper. They're going to be hard to stop this week. Rushing, though, they're 30th against the second-ranked rushing defense. They're going to be one-dimensional. It's going to be on Minuski to kind of they should be able to get pressure with their front line. The Falcons' offensive line is banged up. This is where it's interesting to me. The Falcons' rush defense is 19th in football, 112, almost 113 yards a game. The Redskins are going to be able to run the football against them. The real thing, their pass defense is 30th. They're giving up almost 307 yards a game in the air. And they're giving up 30.3 points per game. The Redskins are going to have an opportunity to score this week. I don't know how they do it. They certainly need to hold on to the football and keep Matt Ryan and his trio of receivers off the field. And they can do that running the football. But they will need to. 20 points most likely will not win you this football game.
No, it's not going to. I don't care how good our defense is. If we cannot sustain drives on offense, Matt Ryan is going to find a way to pick our defense apart. As good as we are, they are a well-oiled machine down there in Atlanta. You know, this is a big test for them this week. You know, if they come out and they beat Atlanta, I think there's going to be a lot of people that say, okay, you know what, the Redskins are good.
Yep.
If we lose and we get blown out like we did against New Orleans, there's going to be a lot of people saying they're trash. And the NFC East is just junk. So this is a hugely important game for them. I mean, they really need to go out. If they can control the clock, I'm confident that we're going to be able to run the ball. Need to see a little bit more out of the offense in general, though. I mean, they just need to mix it up a little bit more. And hopefully they can do that, but we shall see.
Yeah, I think it sets up well for the Redskins. I mean, they play at home. The weather's going to be kind of in the... I mean, the Falcons are used to playing in a dome.
Right.
And then, you know, on that turf, they can really run a wide-open offense. It's going to be a little bit different at FedEx. It's going to be not cold, but it's going to be cool. It's going to be like in the probably high 40s, low 50s. It should be sunny, though. I don't think it's supposed to rain. So it sets up well for the Redskins. The Redskins are only one-point favorites again. The Falcons at 3-4. They're better than 3-4, but I mean, if you look at it, their wins are against Tampa, Carolina, and the Giants. Their losses are against Philly, Cincy, Pittsburgh, and the Saints. The Redskins should win this football game. They should. They should be, but it's an offense. I don't know how well our defense matches up against their offense, because especially if Dunbar doesn't play, you're going to be asking a lot of Monte Nicholson, Fabian Moreau. You're going to be asking a lot of those guys.
Well, hopefully Josh Norman is going to be covering Julio Jones, and we don't get into a situation that we were in yesterday where Greg Stroman on a 3rd-and-17 against Odell Beckham is asked to cover him. I don't know why that was the case. It ended up badly for Stroman, of course. But I don't know. I'm cautiously optimistic about this game. You know, I'm warming up to the Redskins. I am. If they can go out and beat this team, let me preface this by saying, you know, those losses are probably pretty good losses. I mean, Philly, Cincy, Pittsburgh, and New Orleans.
They're four of the better teams in football. I mean,
they are.
Cincy's a lot better than people give them credit for. Pittsburgh's Pittsburgh. The Saints are the second best team in the NFC. And Philly, the defending Super Bowl champs, it was in Philly, opening game of the season. You know, emotions were very high for Philly. And Philly was lucky to get out of that game with a win.
They were.
Atlanta should have won that football game. If Atlanta could score in the red zone, they would have won that football game. Yeah, the Redskins, I think they're going to have to do – it's going to be a weird balancing act where they're going to have to keep Atlanta off the field, but they're also going to have to score. You can't have 15 play drives that go 65, 70 yards and then you settle for a field goal. You're going to have to put points up. It's going to take 28 points to win this football game minimum, and a lot's going to fall on Alex this week. I think they're going to be able to run the football, but this is not a good defensive pass defense that they're playing. They should be able to move the football in the air.
They should be able to. And what the Redskins need to do, which we have not seen them do all year long, which is why a lot of people are still wary on the Redskins, is play a full 60 minutes of football. You know, they let off the gas, so to speak, when they were playing Carolina. They were up 17-0. And then they came out and laid an egg, as they have been doing in the third quarter. I mean, if we could just skip the third quarter altogether, that would be great. But you're not going to be able to do that against this Atlanta team. They're too powerful on offense to let up. And I don't know why that third quarter is so awful for us. I mean, I don't know what goes on. And I can't imagine that any of these guys are saying, you know what, let's just go out there and take it easy. I mean, that's not the case. Our play calling seems to be a little awkward, though, in the third quarter. We can't afford to make those kinds of mistakes this weekend.
Jay's not known for his halftime adjustments. I think that's... He's also not known for changing his offensive game plan when it's not working. And I think that that's a combination of he's getting out-coached in the third quarter because the defenses are making adjustments and he's not adjusting to their adjustments. That would be my assessment of that. I agree with you. They can't... This is not a game I think that you can run out to a lead and then try to hold on for dear life. It seems like they've done that just about every week. But the Falcons can score quickly. I love our defense, but it's an offensive league. Everything is designed for offenses to score more points. I don't care how good your defense is. Good defenses are going to give up points. Redskins need to score 28 this week. So I'll just flat out ask you. You have a prediction?
My prediction is if we score first, we win.
Okay.
But if we don't, we lose.
Do we score first and do we win?
I think that we will score first. I really do. I don't know what it is. Something in my mind just changed yesterday watching this team that I think that we're getting there. You know, we're not there yet offensively. But the way the defense played really showed me something. And has been showing me something. I enjoy watching them play. And for years, the last few years especially, you know, we kept saying, you know, if we just had a defense that could get off the field, you know, we can make some noise in the playoffs. And we've just had the most atrocious defenses. Even last year, we started out as a pretty good defense. And then with all the injuries, I mean, just really...
Yeah, we've been relatively blessed. We've been relatively blessed health-wise this year.
Yes.
Knock on wood.
But that's my assessment. I think if we score first, we win.
I think they win. I think it's a close game. I think it's probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 28-24 Washington. The thing that gives me a lot of hope, Atlanta's coming off of a bye. Their last game, they played the Giants. The Giants are an okay defense. They play good defense. Their game plan against Atlanta was phenomenal. They got pressure on Matt Ryan, only rushing four, sometimes five guys. It sets up well for the Redskins. I think the Redskins can do that. I think Payne and Allen will have big days, Ioannidis. I think they'll generate pressure. I think they'll make Matt Ryan uncomfortable. I don't think Atlanta will be able to run the football. They're going to be one-dimensional. Atlanta's going to hit on some plays. They just are. That's just the way their offense is. But I think the Redskins, and it's weird to say they're going to score 28 points. I think the defense is going to put them in some positions where they have short fields. I think they win 28-24. I think they'll be 6-2. It's a weird feeling. They're the better football team, and they're playing at home. They should win this game this week. It's not as a big a slam dunk as I thought the Giants game would be, especially because the Giants had traded Snacks Harrison and Eli Apple before the game. But the Redskins are the better football team. I think they win. I think that they no longer require weekly motivation from Jay Gruden. I think that they all finally have a purpose. They all have that motivation on their own. And with a guy like DJ Swearinger getting them fired up every game, sky's the limit for them, I think, defensively.
Well, you know, coming off the field yesterday, Josh Norman was apparently furious, and they weren't quite sure why, but what he was upset about was the fact that the Giants scored. That's great to see.
Yeah.
You know, that's...
They hadn't given up a touchdown all day until that last drive.
Yeah.
And I think that was a big thing that they wanted to hang their hat on.
Sure.
They'd only given up two field goals. Redskins could have scored more points yesterday. AP had a bad fumble inside the red zone that cost them. But DJ Swearinger put them in good position twice with interceptions that they didn't really capitalize on. I think the offense will start to get better. I'd like to see them make a trade tomorrow. We'll see what happens. But I think they win this week, 28-24. I think they'll be 6-2. And then the two biggest games of the year are going to be Philly after Thanksgiving and then Philly the last game of the year. Because Philly, I think, is going to start winning chunks of football games. They look like they finally hit their stride. Carson Wentz is back. He was 21 of 30 yesterday, 286 with three touchdowns. They're kind of doing a running back by committee because Jay Ajayi's out. I think it's a two-horse race. Dallas was on a bye this week. Giants are clearly out of it at 1-7. The Redskins need to win these games while they can. Because they have, you know, Houston is the only team now that has a winning record. And Houston looks good, so that's not going to be a gimme. But
Houston has looked good. I'm not as high on Philly as what you may be. You know, their defense, they're certainly not the team that they were last year. Against Carolina last week, I mean, they gave up three drives of 75 yards or more to let Carolina come back and win that game. I mean, that is inexcusable. And they almost blew it yesterday.
They did.
And Jacksonville is not, of course, the team that they were last year either. I mean, they have a quarterback that's worse than what we got. And they almost, they had the opportunity to pull it off, I should say that. But Jacksonville is not very good. And
surprisingly,
I don't think Philly is either. Now, it's always a different story when we play them. I think Doug Peterson's a great head coach. And I think he's going to get the most out of his guys. But Carson Wentz doesn't look, you know, back to 100% yet.
They say a knee injury like that, it can sometimes take a full year after you're healed to fully trust it and be confident. The Redskins, they're a game and a half clear of Philly. Philly's going to be on a bye this week. They win, they're two games clear of Philly. They have every opportunity to win this division. Their schedule sets up for it. I don't think Dallas is very good, even with the addition of Amari Cooper. This is a big game, actually, against Atlanta. It's a big game.
It is a big game.
Because if you lose, you're a game up on Philly. If you win, you're two games up. And it really shows, because then you're just beating the crap out of NFC teams. I mean, they've beaten the teams that they might see in the playoffs. Green Bay, Carolina, potentially Dallas, maybe. This would be another step. Atlanta's one of the top half teams in the NFC, despite what their record is. And it would be a big win for them. I think they'll do it. I'd like to see FedEx rocking. I haven't said that yet this year because I like Dan Snyder being embarrassed by the crowd size. But I'd like to see FedEx rocking. I'd like to see it filled with Burgundy and Gold fans, excuse me. And I don't know. It's going to be a fun game to watch. I look forward to it.
Yeah, I don't expect FedEx is going to be filled.
There might be a lot of black and red with the Falcons.
Yeah, there might be. You know what I read this morning that I thought was interesting? That with the Redskins' victory yesterday against the Giants, that this was the first time since 1995 that we've won our first two divisional games.
Is that, wow, man, 23 years?
Yeah.
That is some ineptitude. That's amazing.
It is. I mean, you know, beating Dallas and Philly. I mean, we haven't beaten Dallas and Philly for a while.
Hadn't beaten Dallas in, what, 3 years?
Right.
We haven't played Philly yet, but...
The Giants. I had to laugh when you did mention Dallas, though, with Amari Cooper, because that trade was just ridiculous. And I know you guys touched on that last week, but a first-rounder for Amari Cooper.
And they fired their offensive line coach today, coming out of a bye.
Right.
Jerry is panicking, man. Like, he sees a somewhat, in his mind, probably weak NFC East, and he goes, we could win the division this year, and they're just not... Right. They don't have weapons. We've said that over and over again. They are a carbon copy offensively of the Redskins. I think the Redskins have a better offensive line. And probably a slightly better quarterback. I mean, I don't know. I guess they could be... They're probably about the same. Dak's more mobile. Alex Smith clearly has more experience and doesn't turn the ball over as much. But no, I think they're panicking. I think Jerry's panicking. And I don't know, man. I mean, I don't really look at Dallas as a threat. Philly, I am a little bit higher on them than you are. They are the defending Super Bowl champions. And I think Carson Wentz obviously will continue to get better week after week. But they're hurt by Jay Ajayi being out for the year. And it's a wide-open NFCs, but I think the Redskins have the inside track based on their record, 2-0 in the division already. And their schedule is set up for them.
It's favorable.
It is. So I think we put a nail in that one. We've talked for 50 minutes about the Redskins. We're both very optimistic. I feel good about it. And when we come back, we're going to do a mixed bag, mainly talk about the World Series, talk a little bit about free agency coming up in baseball. Matt's got some final thoughts that he has prepared, which I find very interesting. So I look forward to talking about that. But we'll be back in a bit. We're going to take a quick break, and we will see you guys shortly. Alrighty, we are back. Before we dive into our mixed bag, which is mainly going to be baseball related, another reminder that we are affiliated with the DMVSportsNetwork.com. That's DMVSportsNetwork.com. They can be reached on Twitter at DMV_SN. Again, they've announced that they have now a platform of 7 podcasts, one a day, that are being released. We are part of that. They also have daily articles on all things DC sports. If you're interested in joining their team, send them a direct message on Twitter at DMV_SN and also visit their website. We have a tab up there for our podcast, DMVSportsNetwork.com. All right, let's jump in to the World Series champion Red Sox. They won in 5 games. Aside from the adventure that was Game 3, the 18-inning adventure, the Red Sox won pretty handily.
They did.
They were clearly the better team, clearly the best team in baseball. They had 108 regular season wins. They were 11-3 in the postseason. But the most impressive thing to me, they beat 200-win teams pretty easily. The Yankees, they beat in 4 games. In Houston, they beat in 5 games. So I'm just going to ask you, we talked about this. In your mind, are they one of the best teams of all time?
Absolutely. As much as I hate to admit it and give Boston credit for anything, they were the best team in Major League Baseball wire to wire. And they were phenomenal in the playoffs. I mean, not only did they go 11-3, but they closed out wins in, you know, their opposing team's parks. You know, that's tough to do. They had a lineup that was just so tough. So I mean, as an Orioles fan, we got beat down a lot this year. Pretty much by everybody, but especially Boston.
Former Oriole, Steve Pierce. It's amazing how these teams that win World Series, how they find... Steve Pierce wasn't found. I mean, he's been a good ball player, but how these guys go to another level and they seem to carry a World Series winner across the finish line. Pierce only had a few hits in the World Series, but man, were they big hits. I mean, just huge hits. Home run, a couple home runs. He was amazing.
He provided the offense that won the games. I mean, that's what it was. And I'm happy for Steve Pierce because I always liked him as an Oriole. I mean, he's been a journeyman. He's played for every AL East team, which is kind of funny. And he was traded for cash considerations. I don't know if you know.
Yeah, he was a July or August pickup for the Red Sox, or might have been June. I mean, they have a couple guys that, you know, they have the largest payroll in baseball, but they also have a couple guys that they picked up for very little. Nathan Eovaldi, they picked up in the middle of the season. Pierce, they picked up in the middle of the season. They are a well-run organization. They also have an unlimited supply of cash, which certainly helps. David Price finally redeemed himself.
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of people that would argue that David Price would be the MVP of the World Series, and he is very deserving of that, I think. I would pick Steve Pierce just because the hits that he had were so huge. But, you know, David Price, having pitched Game 2 and in relief in 3 and warmed up in 4, and then, of course...
He pitched every night. Yeah. He just didn't come into some games. But he pitched every night, and him pitching last night was to give Chris Sale an additional day. He was almost, to me, like Alex Cora going, worst case, we're up 3-2. We've got Chris Sale in Game 6 at Fenway. But David Price pitched amazing last night. And then Chris Sale comes in to put the final nail in the coffin. Now they are, and the silly thing is, the most of the team's coming back next year.
Right.
I mean, Kimbrell's gone unless they re-sign him. Eovaldi's a free agent. He's going to get paid because, I mean, he's throwing the hardest he's ever thrown after two Tommy Johns. But they're bringing back, the offense is all coming back pretty much. I mean, Mookie's their franchise cornerstone. They've got JD under contract, technically 4 more years, but another year before you can opt out. They're built for success. So my next question, it hasn't happened in almost 20 years. Can the Red Sox repeat?
I don't see why they can't. I mean, just for the reason that you've stated. I mean, they are well equipped, and Mookie Betts, who's MVP, would you say?
Oh, he's certainly the MVP of the AL,
Yeah.
definitely. He wouldn't have been if Trout had stayed healthy. But, I mean, Mike Trout is in a league all of his own. But
Mookie's awesome, and he's an Orioles killer.
yeah, he's clearly a top five, six player in all of baseball. Yeah, he's clearly that. And they're going to be their franchise cornerstone. He's not going anywhere.
I don't know who in the American League is going to be able to beat them again. The Yankees, I think, are going to be good again.
Especially if they add Manny Machado. And if they add Manny Machado and Patrick Corbin, they add another starter.
And New York is one of the teams that I have picked as a landing spot for Machado.
Yeah.
And God, I just hope that's not the case. But that's out of my control, so I'll just deal with it when it happens.
It did come out today that the Yankees are not. I don't think this is a surprise to anybody. They are not going to pursue Bryce Harper. They don't need an outfield. Their outfield is loaded. I also think that if they had their choice, because Trout will be a free agent the following year, why not back the money truck up for Mike Trout? But the Yankees will give Boston a run for their money, especially if they add a Machado or a starting pitcher, and Houston's going to be good again.
Well, who do you think? I mean, who do you think that Boston can repeat?
I think Boston's one of the greatest teams of all time, the 2018 Red Sox. They caught a lot of lightning in a bottle, as most World Series teams do. They gelled together well. Is it repeatable? Can they win 108 games again? I don't know. I mean, they were remarkably healthy with the exception of Chris Sale going on the DL for shoulder issues. It seemed like in the World Series, actually not just in the World Series, but in the postseason, everything Alex Cora did, with the exception of not going to get Eduardo Rodriguez, a batter too late when Yasiel Puig hit that
Right.
monster shot. It seemed like everything that Alex Cora did worked. But the Yankees are going to be better. And Houston is still Houston with the best starting rotation in all of baseball. So, do I think they can repeat? Yes. Do I think they will? I don't think so. I think they caught lightning in a bottle this year. I still think they'll be a playoff team next year, either winning the division or winning a wild card. But they can't continue to spend what they're spending and pay what they pay luxury tax-wise. They're probably going to try to fight to get under that luxury tax. At least I think they will, because it becomes very the penalty becomes pretty high over a couple of years. You're going to be paying 50, 60, 75% of what the overage is. And for them, I think they were at like 240 or 250 million this year. So they were 65 million over the luxury tax. I don't know. I think they can. I don't think they will. Do you?
I think that they will. My reasons may be a little different than yours. I think if they can get through New York and Houston again, it may be smooth sailing for them in the World Series next year. I think it can happen. I think it will happen. I said today to, one of my coworkers, I think that any of the AL teams that were in the playoffs could have beaten the Dodgers or any of the NL teams in the playoffs. I thought the AL was so much better.
Oh, clearly
than anybody in the National League.
The only team in the American League that would have had a run for its money against the Dodgers or against the Brewers would have been probably the Indians. Or even maybe the A's. But the A's I never really considered because they didn't get into the Final Four.
Right.
But maybe the Indians. But no, the National League, and that was actually the point I was going to make, and it pains me to say this because I'm a diehard Nationals fan. I don't think any team in the National League next year will be as good as the top three teams in the American League are. I think that there are three teams in the AL East that have the potential to be better than any team in the National League. Because Tampa, they won 90 games this year. Given their payroll,
right,
it's really miraculous the job that they did. So the AL East is a juggernaut. I agree with you. I think if you get to the World Series as an AL team, you have a really good chance of winning it. They are bringing back their whole rotation with the exception of Eovaldi. You're talking about Sale, Price, Porcello. Yeah, they certainly can do it. I don't know if they will, but they certainly can. Houston, still to me, with that rotation, they're going to be tough to beat.
They are. And, you know, at some every year, it's or at least the last couple of years, I've really been saying to myself, how long can Justin Verlander sustain this? I mean, he's, what, 35 years old now?
Yeah, 34, 35, yeah. I think he's got like 2 to 3 good years left.
He might. I mean, he was throwing pretty hard. You know, I mean, he was 98 miles an hour. It's like, wow, you know, this is pretty amazing. And they have a nice lineup. I actually really like watching them play. To me, they were probably one of the more fun teams. And even the Brewers, I think the Brewers were pretty fun to watch this year.
I think the Brewers were the only team in the National League this year that had any chance against an American League team just because of how good their bullpen was. That if they were able to get 4 innings out of a starter and could score early in the game, they could suffocate an American League team. The Dodgers just didn't have it. Their bullpen wasn't that good. I mean, Kenley Jansen looked terrible. And I know he's been dealing with health issues, and I you know, not going to knock the guy. He's a great closer.
Yeah, he is.
But they did, Pedro Baez was pretty good, but beyond that, they just didn't have the arms. And Clayton Kershaw was human. I mean, he gave up, 5 runs last night? Let's parlay into that. Pending free agents. Obviously, the cream of the crop this year, Bryce Harper, Manny Machado. But before we get to them, I sent Josh this question last night. Clayton Kershaw has an opt-out. He also has 2 years left on his deal if he wants to stay, averaging like $36 million a year. It's nuts. So I don't necessarily think he'll opt out, but my question to you is, do you think that somebody would pay him, say, $30 million a year for 5 years? Because that would be the only reason why he would opt out, is if he thinks somebody will do that.
Yes, the Yankees would do that.
Do you think he's worth that?
You know, there's a part of me that says, I mean, he's obviously one of the best pitchers that I've ever seen, but, and I know his record in the playoffs is not very good, but I think as long as he's with the Dodgers, that he's not going to win. I don't believe in the Dodgers. I like Dave Roberts. I think he's a pretty good manager, even though I think he got outmanaged in this World Series. I think if it's about money, and the Yankees, who are going to have some money, come to him, yeah, I think he would go. I think somebody would pay him, absolutely.
I wouldn't pay him $30 million a year. I don't think anybody's worth that. But, I mean, if the benchmark at $30 million a year is my guy, Max Scherzer, I mean, Kershaw's not Max Scherzer anymore. Can he be? Could he reinvent himself like Justin Verlander did? Maybe. But his velocity's way down. And his strikeouts have been down over the last couple of years. He's also been dealing with injuries. If you're going to pay $30 million to a pitcher, he's probably not the guy I would do it to. But he's Clayton Kershaw. I mean, he is the best pitcher of this generation. And he's only 31. Or he'll be 30. Right. He'll be 31.
Well, I mean, in this day and age, there's only so many teams that would even consider paying that. The Yankees are always in the forefront of those talks. It wouldn't be out of the question for them to do something like that. I mean, as a Baltimore fan, I know that's never going to happen, ever. Or at least as long as the Angelos family still owns the team. But could it be done? Yes, I think so.
Parlays into my next, or the next thing, which is the Bryce Harper, Manny Machado thing. I think Machado, I read something today, he clearly prefers to be back on the East Coast. The Yankees are going to be heavy after him. I think that he would prefer to play for the Yankees. But I think Atlanta and Philadelphia, who have buckets of money to spend, will go after him as well. Bryce Harper, it's a little different. I don't know how many suitors are out there for him. But it did come out that his negotiations are starting at 10 years for $350. If that's the case, the Nationals should say, thank you for 7 years. We're going to move elsewhere. Because $35 million a year for him, I love him. He's just not worth that kind of money. To me, no position player is, but he's definitely not, in my opinion.
No, and what I read was that Scott Boras, I don't know if he tweeted or what, but he said that there's already a deal wrapped up.
Yeah, he was on, I think it was The Fan in New York, and he said, well, you know, it's already wrapped up. Team's already picked, and contract's already wrapped. This was before the World Series ended.
Right.
But Bryce wants to tell you himself, you know, the news, so I'm going to let him do that. And the assumption was, by most people, that he was kidding, and he did come out today and say he was joking.
Okay.
Because the only team that could negotiate with him at the time were the Nationals, or it was a severe tampering issue.
Right. Well, either way, I was going to say that, you know, he was full of shit.
Yes, absolutely. I said this on the podcast last week. Josh eviscerated me for it. I wouldn't want Manny Machado on my team. In the biggest stage of his career, he had multiple incidents where he really showed his character. I mean, the other night in the 18-inning game, he stepped on, Steve Pierce's ankle as he goes through first base. Was it last night or the night before? No, it was the night before. In the ninth inning, down two runs. He hits a ground ball to third base, and it doesn't really look like he was sprinting down the line. You know, he said that he doesn't hustle.
Right.
Obviously, you watched him closely for 7 years. You were a big Manny fan. You're probably not surprised by this behavior. And not as surprised as I was. I mean, I didn't watch him daily. I remember the incidents like with Josh Donaldson and throwing the bat and all that crap. If you're an owner, not Angelos, because nobody wants to be him, but if you're an owner, would you sign him?
Yes.
Yeah, I figured.
Yes.
Josh basically called me a vulgar word off air, and he goes, you're such a pansy. Let's use that word. He called me a version of pansy. He says, you only care about character. And I'm like, I get it. I just don't like that Bryce Harper gets that image, but he doesn't do any of that crap. He's actually on the field. He's very respectful. He plays the game right.
He does, but I don't know that, and I said this, I believe, the last time I was on the podcast, and that's, you know, I don't know that Bryce Harper is a likable guy. You know, he's very reserved. I mean, there are a lot of people, especially in the Orioles clubhouse, that would vouch for Manny Machado and talk about how what people perceive him to be is not really the case. But to answer your question, I don't know what owner in baseball would pass on Manny Machado if they had the opportunity to sign him.
He's a generational player. Defensively, he's one of the best I've ever seen at third. He actually started to round into a pretty good shortstop at the end of the year. He's all of those things. And honestly, if the Nationals signed him, I wouldn't be upset. If the Nats said, we're not going to go get Bryce, but we're going to move Anthony Rendon to second and put Manny at third, or we're going to move Trey Turner to second and put Manny at short, I wouldn't hate it, because you're replacing a big bat with another big bat, and you're making your infield defense one of the best in baseball. I don't like to see that crap. Especially stepping on a guy's foot and then grabbing your crotch and staring at the opposing team's fans. Like, I don't know, man. I'm all about, hey, man, flip the bat, celebrate around your do all that. I love that.
Let the kids play, right?
Let the kids play, right? You know, Yasiel Puig really pimped that home run. Really pimped that home run. I mean, it was a huge home run.
Right,
it was. I don't know. I think Manny will make more money. I think if a team's going to sign, if the Nats are going to sign Bryce Harper, there needs to be some, and I said this to my dad the other day, if the Nationals' ceiling on payroll right now is 100, let's say they want it to be $180 million, and that's without Bryce. With Bryce, if you're going to sign him, you got to raise that to 190. You got to have a $10 million add-on in there for marketing and all that, because otherwise it's not worth it. You got to say, we're going to increase our payroll by $10 million because he's worth that, ticket sales, merchandise sales, marketing, all of that. Otherwise, he's not worth $35 million a year. I mean, he's a character. He's one of the most prominent players in the game. He's still only 25. He's had an MVP season. But man, $35 million a year. If your payroll is 180, that's 20% of your payroll for one player. I can't see them doing it. That's my opinion.
I can't, but, you know, there's a part of me that thinks he's going to stay in D.C. I don't have anything in front of me that says anything, I guess, substantive that he would go somewhere else. It's just, I guess, a gut feeling that he stays in D.C. I just don't see Bryce Harper playing for anybody else next year.
He likes it here. I do believe, and I said this when I did the solo podcast, that he is one of those guys that really studies the history of the game, and he's got a lot of respect for Cal Ripken, Tony Gwynn, the guys that played for one team their entire career. And I think he wants to be that if possible. It's just going to be a question of, does he structure the contract to benefit the Nationals? Does Scott Boras let him sign for less than what he could get elsewhere? Boras isn't in charge. He works for Bryce. But Boras does go after the money. Nats have had success in the past with Boras, signing guys before they hit free agency, Steven Strasburg. But I think that he's an outlier because Strasburg is all about comfort. He likes D.C. He didn't want to change. I think Bryce is similar. He is a homebody. That's why he's so quiet. He just likes to play and then go home. And he says, watch Netflix with his wife, and that's cool, you know. I've said this before. My mind says they shouldn't re-sign him because of the talent they have in the outfield. But my heart says I want him to stay, and I want him to be the franchise player, the lifetime National. We'll talk a lot about it moving forward. I mean, it's going to just dominate the hot stove until he signs or until Manny signs. It'd be interesting to see if Clayton Kershaw opts out. I think that David Price has an opt-out, but I don't think he opts out because he's making $31 million a year, and I don't think anybody would pay him that now.
I don't think so either.
Even after having a good postseason, I don't think anybody would pay him that. But I look forward to it. I do think, though, the cream of the crop, the American League, again, is going to be a 3 or 4 horse team, you know, league. The Indians, their division sucks, so they'll be in the conversation, but they're not in the same class as Houston, the Yankees, and the Red Sox, and I don't see that changing next year. Actually makes for a boring regular season in the American League, except when those three teams play each other. National League will be wide open again. It all depends on, you know, who signs where, who augments their staff, and who doesn't. It's going to be a fun offseason, though.
It will. You know, one of the two teams that I think, and I guess I don't want to limit it to just two teams, but I think the two top teams that are most likely to sign Manny Machado would be the Yankees or the Phillies. I really think, I mean, with Philly having the money to do it, you know, a good young team. I think Machado would be the star there. I don't think he would be the star in the Yankees organization. I mean, they have plenty of them already.
Nobody's going to shine brighter than Aaron Judge.
Exactly.
Nobody's going to shine brighter than Aaron Judge. Giancarlo, I mean, he might not even be the most popular infielder. I mean, they've got Gleyber Torres.
Right.
They're loaded with talent. I mean, it's ridiculous.
They are.
They did it. Brian Cashman did a great job rebuilding that franchise, and they're going to be good for a long time. But I do think that I think the Yankees are the most likely spot, but I do think Atlanta and Philly are going to, you know, make a run at it. They both have a lot of money to spend. And I think they both will also make a run at Bryce Harper, which would be tough as a Nationals fan to see him go to another team in the NL East. We shall see. Let's move on. You had a couple interesting final thoughts that I wanted to yield the floor to you and see what you had to say.
Thanks, Nate. So I don't know if you saw, but today, Cleveland Browns head coach Hugh Jackson and their offensive coordinator Todd Haley were both fired. They named Greg Williams, the former Redskins head coach in waiting, as the interim head coach. Now, I am not going to bring up the fact that you claim that Cleveland was a playoff-bound team.
I've lost a lot of bets.
But since you did respond to that, I guess my first question is, did you mean this year?
I meant this century. Listen, man, I thought they had all the pieces. I did not account for how... First of all, they've had a weird season, right? How many games have gone in overtime? How many games have they lost in heartbreaking fashion in overtime? I mean, it's been a weird... They could very easily be in the playoff conversation if they won those games. But they're also severely dysfunctional as an organization.
Yeah. Well, honestly, I think the only thing weird about it is the fact that they actually made it to overtime and didn't lose in regulation.
Right. I mean, but seriously, I think it's like five games that have gone to overtime.
Yeah, at least four.
Yeah.
So my question is, who should they hire?
You're going to want an offensive-minded head coach, or you're certainly going to want a powerful offensive coordinator to work with. Baker. I don't know, man. That's a good question. I have no idea. I don't even know who would be available.
Well, let's say, for example, Urban Meyer from Ohio State.
Did he get fired?
He did not get fired.
He's still coaching there?
He is still coaching. He's back from suspension. But he's already in Ohio. He's won two national championships at two different schools. Do you think you would call on him if you were the GM of the Cleveland Browns?
I am always not a huge fan of college coaches moving to the NFL because in college, the head coach is a dictator. They have all the power. Players aren't paid. They have no power. They can't transfer. They can't sit out if they want to play in the NFL someday. You come to the NFL, it's different. These guys are millionaires. They're the commodity. You're not. I mean, you don't fire players. You fire coaches. So I think it would be like when Steve Spurrier came here, you know, or any number. Nick Saban came to the NFL and was a flop and then goes back and builds a dynasty in Alabama. Some guys just need to have – they're not good enough communicators to deal with NFL personalities. So, no, I would not call on Urban Meyer. I also think the guy's a snake, but that's a different story altogether. I would not call on Urban Meyer. I would want to find... I'd be interested to see if Kyle Shanahan makes it through the year. If he survives... Because if he's available, he's already coached there as an offensive coordinator. And he's been dealt a bad hand this year in San Francisco, losing his quarterback early in the season. I'd give him a shot.
Well, I think his job's safe.
Probably. I mean, because it's not his fault that Garoppolo went down with a knee injury. And they're going to have a high draft pick next year. Do you call Mike Shanahan? Would Mike Shanahan even take that job? That's the question. It was curious to me that they fired Todd Haley too.
Right.
There was a speculation that they fired Hugh Jackson and didn't have the... It wasn't in the plans to fire Todd Haley, but they had a meeting with him and then they fired him. Did he talk himself out of a job? I mean, there's a lot of speculation about that, but...
Well, you know, here you go from being the offensive coordinator of Pittsburgh, and, you know, it was kind of a strange situation with him last year anyway. I mean, Pittsburgh was putting up a ton of points, and all of a sudden, he's out. And, you know, it was not their offense that was the reason that they lost in the playoffs years, their defense. But I think it would be depressing for anybody to have to go to Cleveland. I mean, wouldn't it?
Yeah. And Todd Haley's had issues everywhere he's gone. He doesn't seem to be a very likable guy. Who would you? I mean, would you go get Urban Meyer?
I would, yeah.
Yeah? Okay.
I would. I think he's... Listen, aside from the scandal at Ohio State, he is one hell of a football coach. And...
They have talent. The Browns have talent.
They do have talent. And you know, and you made a good point that just because you're a good coach in college does not always translate well. It didn't for Nick Saban. It didn't for Pete Carroll the first time around, but it did the second time.
That's true. But the list of guys that did... It worked for Jimmy Johnson.
Yeah.
But it didn't work for, like, Bobby Petrino, Nick Saban, Steve Spurrier. It didn't work for Pete Carroll the first time, but it did work the second time. I don't know if there are any coaches in waiting, especially if you want an offensive-minded coach to work with Baker, that you would really jump on.
Well, it's probably the first time in a very, very long time that, you know, it would pique somebody's interest to want to take a job in Cleveland. I mean, it's not the most desirable place to even live, much less coach.
That's true. I mean, but you got Baker, and he looks like he's the real deal. And you have a ton of cap room. You have draft picks. You've got young talent, young controllable talent. It is more of a landing spot than it has been in the past. I've never been a fan of firing coaches midseason, especially if you have a rookie quarterback. I think it's damaging to their development. Yeah, I guess Urban Meyer would be interesting. And maybe he just wants to get out of college, get out of the NCAA after this year. That would be interesting. An interesting situation to watch.
Yeah. That's something to keep tabs on, at least.
Yeah. And you had another final thought. I think it was about Scott McLuhan, right?
Yeah, so just a couple of hours ago, read it in the Washington Post that the Redskins won the grievance that was filed by Scott McLuhan from his firing in 2017.
He wanted to get paid out the rest of his contract.
He did.
And he didn't get it.
So my question to you is, I know at the time you were against, at least I believe you were against, the firing of Scott McLuhan.
I was, very much so.
Do you still feel the same way?
I think a lot of the Redskins' success on the field this year has a lot to do with him and the philosophy that he put in. Clearly, the guys that are still in the building, Eric Schaefer, Doug Williams, I think Morocco Brown's still there, have done a good job drafting. The Redskins don't trade away draft picks anymore. As a talent evaluator, I wish he was still on the payroll. But then again, I mean, he's not going to hit on everybody, but he was really high on Josh Doctson and it has not worked out. But he also, he was, again, we talked about this earlier in the podcast, that he was about building from the inside out and he wanted to build up the offensive line, defensive line. And he did that. Although Allen and Payne were drafted after he was fired, but Allen was his number one. They were using his draft board last year when they drafted Allen.
And that was sort of a no-brainer. Much like Daron Payne was this year.
No, it was. I mean, the Alabama contingent continues to grow together. You know, throw Ryan Anderson in there. And Ioannidis was a pick by McLuhan. McGlewin brought Mason Foster in. He put a big stamp on this team. I wish he was still in the building. I think that he's not in the building because Bruce Allen got jealous of the attention he was getting. I think that he's not in the building because Bruce Allen needs to be number one, even though Bruce Allen sucks at evaluating talent.
He does. I mean, you know what? I was thinking about this. Our biggest playmakers on offense, you would say, at least let's go over the top three. Jordan Reed, right?
Yep.
Drafted by Mike Shanahan.
True.
Chris Thompson. You Mike put Shanahan. Him up there? Mike Shanahan. Well, the guy that we had at quarterback last year, who, you know, was very polarizing, obviously.
And has 14 touchdowns, right, and 3 interceptions or something like that this year, yeah. Kirk Cousins.
Also Mike drafted Shanahan. By Mike Shanahan.
And Trent Williams.
Trent Williams.
Drafted by Mike Shanahan.
And Ryan Kerrigan.
Kerrigan drafted by Mike Shanahan.
So, you know, it's it's easy to go, what's Bruce Allen really done here?
Nothing. I mean, now that they don't wear gold pants at home, what has he done? I'm being serious. The one thing they haven't done since Bruce Allen has come in is they don't overpay people. They're not going after these flash in the pan. I mean, the only one that you might look at is Josh Norman, but I don't think that that has not worked out for the Redskins. I actually think Bruce Allen's frugalness has hurt the Redskins in certain instances, mainly Garcon and D-Jax both being gone when they could have kept at least one of them.
Yeah.
Because they have not recovered from that, at least on the outside.
They haven't.
But Bruce Allen has done a good job with contracts, I guess. I mean, you know, with the Trent Williams deal, Kerrigan's under a long-term deal. And they are paying their own guys. They're keeping their own guys, which I like to see. And the focus pretty much since Bruce Allen has come in has been on building from the draft and homegrown talent. But no, I mean, that's mainly been like Eric Schaefer does the contracts. He does salary cap guy. AP was Doug Williams. And then you just rattled off how many players it was because of Mike Shanahan. Yeah. I do still wish McGlewin was here. I understand that there were issues. Obviously, he's got a bit of a drinking problem. But he's also...
Who doesn't?
That's right. He also helped put some of this identity together. You know, his first draft pick wasn't it Brandon Scherff?
That's right.
Yeah. And he's a cornerstone on the offensive line.
He's a mauler.
He is. He's probably going to be an all-pro this year. They're going to have 2 all-pros on the offensive line. It's interesting that he lost his grievance, though. I guess they were able to claim that his drinking had become a real problem and he couldn't prove otherwise. He's doing fine financially, though. I mean, teams are still paying him for his insight. He's a brilliant talent evaluator.
But yeah, I mean, he's with Cleveland.
He is, and Baker.
Playoff bound.
Hey, man, they're better than they were. They're better than they were. But I think that's going to wrap us up. I don't have any final thoughts. Actually, one thing I did want to touch on just very, very quickly. I'm actually pretty tired of the shit that Joe Buck gets. He's pleasant to listen to. I like Joe Buck. I think he's good at calling baseball. I think he's good at calling football. I think he gets out of the way. I don't think he dominates a broadcast. I think he allows, when he's doing football, I think he allows Troy Aikman, as much as sometimes I don't want to hear Troy Aikman talk, I think he allows Aikman to do the talking. I think he did the same thing during a World Series with John Smoltz. I like listening to Smoltz too. There's so many people that hate Joe Buck. I'm tired of it, man. The guy's getting the job for a reason.
Yes. Well, for a long time, I thought he was intolerable. Joe Buck, that is. But I couldn't agree with you more now. I think he does a great job. I think he's, you know, one of the best out there, if not the best. I mean, I always liked Pat Summerall and John Madden.
Oh, you know, yeah. That was the staple, man. That was amazing.
You know, that was my thing. You know, when you look at the Monday Night Crew that they've got, which I think is atrocious. Joe Tessitore, it's like, oh my God, just shut up.
You know who I do like in the Monday Night Crew is Booger McFarlane. I really like him.
Yeah, he's the best one.
He's good. Jason Witten will get better. I mean, he just came off the field. But again, with Buck, he doesn't dominate. He knows when to let the action speak for itself. I really like Joe Buck, and I think he's good at what he does. And he wouldn't be calling two football games a week. And he called, what, two World Series games, then a football game, and then the World Series. Like, he wouldn't be doing all of that if he wasn't the best. He's the best. I just think people, they listen to him, and they infer bias one way or the other, which is bullshit. I mean, he's just calling the game. I'm sick of that. I'm tired of it. I think it's a worn-out, over-the-top criticism. I think it's BS.
Well, kudos to Joe Buck.
Yeah. I like listening to him, and we're going to be listening to him for a long time because he's not that old.
Right.
So to close it out, just a reminder, we are affiliated with the DMV, sportsnetwork.com. Be sure to follow them on Twitter at DMV_SN. Check out, they now have 7 total podcasts. You know, ours, we do it for ourselves, but we are affiliated with them, and we, you know, mutually beneficial. We blast their stuff, they blast ours. So check us out on their website, dmvsportsnetwork.com. Follow them on Twitter at dmv_SN. We'll be back next week. Matt will be sitting in again. Josh is still going to be out of town. I think we'll be looking at a 6-2 Redskin team. It'll probably be Redskin heavy next week because baseball is over. Sad about that.
But. Yeah, that's for sure.
But thanks for sitting in, man.
Yeah,
appreciate it.
Appreciate the invite. Thanks for having me on. And
we'll see you guys next week, man.
See you guys.
Take care.